Welcome to Hallel Fellowship, found on the internet at hallel.info. That's hallel.info. We hope you are encouraged by the following recorded Bible study to look deeper into every word that proceeds from the mouth of God and how they were lived out in the life of Yeshua HaMashiach, often called Jesus the Christ.
Vayikra, which covers basically the first five chapters of the book of Leviticus and a little bit of chapter six as well. And it is covering and starting with some of the discussion of the offerings here and basically defining, well, what the offerings are. And then in our next passage, next week, we'll be taking a look at what the... Okay, now these are what the offerings are. Now what are you going to do with them? So basically describing them, defining them, and then also now putting them into action. So with our next Torah study, we'll talk a little bit more about the offerings here. But this is a unique opportunity that we have to take a look at a time period where, okay, where we see a look back on what the offerings are and with the dwelling place of God. Now, we're also seeing and commemorating here today with the time of Purim, which is a time where you had no access to them. So we can sit here in our time period. None of us have been around the temple. Some of us have been to where the temple used to be, and that place of Zion there, to see where the temple stood and where you'll see the dwelling place of God once again. But none of us have ever seen it in operation. People during the exiles, you had some of them who were young, may have been to the time period and actually have seen when the temple was in operation. So these descriptions of offerings and such are not so strange, but also it's a sense of weeping. Because you're thinking of the what was, that connection that you were having with God in bringing these offerings forward. Because as we were talking about at the last part of Exodus, that these offerings are a part of every person coming in and approaching the dwelling place of God. And that, I hope you noticed as we were going through this passage, and it talks about that when you bring your offering in, you place your hand upon the head. I mean, literally it's talking about you lean on your korban, your offering, as you bring it in. And one of the key things that is talking about is that this is not about an animal. It's not about grain. It's not about anything else. This is about you. This is about us, all of us, going in and approaching the dwelling place of God. So that is what the most important thing is that all of us need to remember when we're taking a look at this, is that this is talking about the dwelling place of God. And so that's why that passage that we saw in Isaiah, a very important aspect to remember, is that this is talking about what the offerings are all about. We people approaching, we people going from far away from where the Lord's presence is, drawing near to where the presence is. So that is what is really important to remember about these things. And also, the phrase that is repeated over and over again, a soothing aroma to the Lord. Any of you who have been around any sort of burning animals, is that a soothing aroma, especially when you're talking about all kinds of stuff going up? No, especially when you're talking about the whole burnt offering. It is not a soothing aroma whatsoever. However, when you are thinking about what it is actually representing about the whole person who was before far off, now being able to approach and come close to the dwelling place of God, the fact that the person who was far off away from God is now able to approach. Is that soothing? Yes, that is soothing. And that is what the whole mission of what God's presence is all about, to take those who are far off. All of us were far off at one point in time and being brought near. Yes, Christine has a comment or a question over there.
So I appreciate the being far off, and what you're saying is that we were all far off and now we're kind of near to God. For me, for all of us, there is a beast inside of us. There is an animal soul. We have the soul and the living spirit to be in the image of Elohim. But every day we battle our thoughts, our desires, our wants, our needs, our compulsion to be beastly every day to each other, to ourselves, to satisfy the desires of our beast nature. And we are commanded to rule over that, where the younger, which is the spirit of Elohim, on the sixth day, we rule over the beast of the field within us. And so this Olah offering, you're saying, is a whole burnt offering that I bring my beastie self to the altar, and nobody eats from it. It is not deserving of anything to be burned up. It is a very difficult thing to do, and it is what is required to us. When you said about leaning on the beast, it was a way of transferring that everything that person had in them, transferring to a beast. And no, we don't have that system anymore, but the desire and the sacrifice is still relevant internally.
Yeah, well, it always was internally. And, you know, that's what those quotations that we saw that were taken from the Psalms and taken from Isaiah and such, you know, our brothers and sisters in the family of God may have, and they hear these passages when they say, you know, offering and sacrifice I have not desired, but a body that you've given for me, and talking about with the Messiah. And they take that and they say, well, okay, well, that whole system was just, that was plan A. Okay, Messiah is the body, that's plan B, that's the better plan. So what was weak, and we just take that away, and now we've got the real substance and reality here. But what we see, and you actually see what the prophets are talking about, is it never was about that the animal or the grain or whatever was going to do anything in and of itself. Because if you weren't, as Christine was talking about, if you weren't all in, fully, you know, there's the buzzword today about leaning in on stuff. Well, if you aren't leaning in on your korban, your offering, if you are basically punching a clock in with the family of God and coming into the house of God, like you're punching a clock, that's where the response comes in Isaiah chapter 1. I hate your feasts. Get out of my face. If that's the way you're going to approach the presence of God, don't approach. Just go away. Rather, what he's looking for is those who want to approach. They want to leave the old man behind, the old person behind. That which was, and as we're going to see as we continue on through the book of Vayikra, that which is not fit to approach, that should be our desire, that that gets left behind. And that that which is fit to approach, that is what goes on and continues on. And that we continually are transformed into that, day by day. Let's see. We got Alex over here, and I think... you're reading Justin Martyr. Mm-hmm.
New Christian Catholic Church, he cited that. So you deep go back, find that sentence. I hate your feasts.
Yeah.
You are no good, whatever. brings that up, and well, here's a new Christian church.
Right.
God hates them in their feasts.
Yeah.
What? What's that anti-Semitism? And, they do it.
Yeah, and it was it was interesting in that I think one of the more interesting approaches that you might say was to basically use the Torah against the Torah, and one of those was the lesson of the eighth day, and that's a whole long discussion in of itself. But basically, it was taking we have one of our festivals, we call it Shemini Atzeret, or the eighth day, and that has and every year we go through and reflect upon the main lessons that that brings and how many lessons that we see in with the number eight, whether in talking about circumcision or this or that or the other, all these lessons again and again and again about you're entering a new phase, a new creation, you know, new heavens, new earth. We see these lessons all the time. Well, that then was taken, okay, well, the Torah is teaching about this new beginning. That is, quote, the church, unquote. And so thus, the Torah gets left behind. So it's a very interesting approach with the eighth day to use the Torah against the Torah, which seems to be a strange way to approach interpretation. But that's a longer discussion of itself. And you have a comment or a question over there.
Well, in Leviticus, it said, according to what I heard you read, was that If a leader sins and it is found out, or the guilt is found out, then the whole congregation or the whole assembly makes atonement for that leader. If the leader is willing to ask for forgiveness, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, when they're talking about and it's found out, that's kind of like the, you could say, the judicial side of that. So this is the leader of your congregation. They come to a judicial decision about that, and also with the what happens within a congregation. If the whole congregation, for whatever reason, is involved with some sort of thing, so that's adjudicated. So yes.
Second part of that question is a comment about Saul. Okay, here's the king, the leader, and he. You know, Samuel comes to him and says, I hear bleating of sheep. And he says, oh, but the people, they were the ones who wanted to save the sheep. You know, and I obeyed the Lord. I did the right thing, but I feared the people.
Yeah, well, you know, so, and that sounds familiar, doesn't it? Yeah. We read about that just about a week or so ago on the golden calf incident. But it was also something else in that when he was saying, well, I was going to offer these to the Lord. But the Lord said, no, I don't want any of that former world to move forward into this. So you're thinking, oh, well, I'll just, and it mentioned specifically the stuff that was not worth keeping. Oh, they felt fit to follow God's instructions on that part. But the stuff that was keep worthy, the stuff that was keepers, well, then we're going to give that as an offering to God. It might start sounding similar to something Yeshua talked about karban, which same word, an offering. Well, that which I thought I was give to my parents, well, I'm going to give that to God. Well, no, what are you actually going to do with it? You're going to hold on to it and use it yourself. Instead of fulfilling your God-tasked role as a child to honor your parents and give your parents the honor that is due them. So that's kind of a very important thing that the Lord is saying, hey, you have to follow through with these responsibilities that God is giving you, and don't try to rationalize it with something that even on its face sounds like a good thing. Offerings to God, right? That's a good thing, right? Well, if you're trying to get out of something else that God said takes precedence over that, then that's a bad thing. So you've turned something that would be otherwise good into a bad thing in the process. Yes. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, there's that phrase, free will offering, mentioned multiple times, you know, yeah. So a smoothing aroma to the Lord, if the heart posture is right, I know the guilt is upon me. I know my sin is upon me. Like in the gospel, the guy's bounding on his chest, you know, yeah. He knows he's filthy rags, you know. So yeah, it's, you know, and like you mentioned there in Isaiah 1, I hate your feasts. Because it was, you know, the free will offering didn't have no love behind it. It was check.
Yeah. Yeah. So always got to be careful about that. Yes, Rose, go ahead, please.
Well, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but I see this whole thing being acted out today because we have open borders and Amalek is alive and well among us and growing rapidly. And I think there's a scripture, I don't know quite where it's at, I have read it, where it says that the enemy is within. And when I grew up in Worldwide, we always thought it was somebody else, but I'm really thinking it's Amalek, because we did not obey God, and we did not kill the king and all the sheep and all the animals, and we didn't do all that. We did what we wanted to do. And that's what's happening today, is that we do what we want to do. Right. Oh, okay, God, I'll check you out maybe on Sabbath, or I'll come around on a holy day or something. And but, you know, because we do what we want to do, I'm talking as a nation, not as a individual, but our nation has turned its back on God. We took God out of the schools. We took God out of the courthouse. We took God out of the law. And so now he says, okay, this is what you're going to get. So to me, what is that saying? Those who don't learn from history is destined to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it because we don't listen to God.
Yeah. Okay, Christine, then Larry.
Yeah, I'm just going to echo off that. Just like in Revelation, the man of lawlessness, I may very well have my own Amalek inside of me, the religion of Cain. I struggle, you know, as human beings, we have that dichotomy. That is where, you know, we're both spiritual and physical. And it's just through constant, teaching and learning and doing what is instructed for the learning Torah, for the sake of Torah, learning to hone in these things and get a different spiritual meaning. And it isn't, we can even, I take it in my life, I take it in my family's life, then it can be brought to us as a fellowship as well. You know, are we doing our own thing? Are we together, walking in the yoke together? So there's such rich stuff in Viacra, and just bless you for the teachings always, Jeff, for preparing them and presenting them.
Larry, go ahead, please.
One thing I was noticing in the beginning when we were doing the thing in Isaiah about when you turn your foot from doing your own things, something that I had not heard before that hit me hard was he also said in speaking your own speech, which I think means idle chatter. So, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I'm thinking, that hits me hard, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things that you know, when people are reflecting on Shabbat and what that means, one of those things that it's been talked about and made a lot of headlines here recently by yet another study about people with anxiety. And what kinds of people, and what, it's more of an ideological split of people who suffer the most anxiety. And those who are thinking that are latch on to ideologies that are mostly about humanity has the solutions for it. Humanity finds the solutions. Well, for that, when can you ever rest? You can never rest. there is always the problems. There is always the problems, and then problems compounded by problems, compounded by problems, compounded by problems. For those that then trust that, yeah, there are problems, but there is a solution, and there are solutions that will happen whether we do it or not. We are to be faithful in following through with the instructions given to us to be a light, to be that light in the world. But that will be done. Heaven's will be done apart from us. So thus, when you see with the Shabbat, Shabbat is like, hey, he created for 6 days and then he stopped. So thus, you work for 6 days and then you stop. And even the further lesson, which is a tough one, we're in an agricultural area, in seed time and in harvest, you stop. And if you ever talked with people in the wine business, you know what harvest time is like. It's like when you start getting those sugars levels, people start getting antsy, you know, and then it's just like pedal to the metal. Just get the grapes in as fast as you can, especially if you're in the middle of a heat spike. And there's a heat spike and the sugar's going up and you're like, you're telling me to wait for 24 hours? Are you kidding? So, thus, when you're saying, hey, even in seed time and harvest, can you actually trust that there is a time when you can stop? Yes, Larry, go ahead, please.
Is that like when we say, wait on the Lord? The problems that we have, we'll just stop thinking about them because he'll take care of it in his own time.
Yes, they will reach their resolution, you know, one way or another. And will we actually trust that they will be done as they should be done?
To him, not yes. According to us.
Exactly. And it may be le'olam va'ed, over the horizon and beyond, before that reaches its resolution to it. Yes, Carrie, go ahead, please.
I'm just thinking, going along with that, if we stop the discussion at stop thinking about it or we just have to trust, that's not really helpful for most people. We actually need to be trained. We need to learn what the mechanisms are. We have to take the steps. We're void-oriented beings. Which means it's kind of along the lines of the spirit that got cast out of the heart, but then when he came back eightfold because he brought seven friends. And it's because the person left a void. He didn't fill it. Well, what do we fill it with? So the steps that we need to take to trust, we don't just stop thinking about the thing that we're feeling anxious about. We actually have to think on the things of God, just like Scripture says. And we have to trust him. It might even involve some visualization of what things will actually look like when he brings his will to pass. But that's what we've got to focus our energy and our thoughts and our feelings on.
Yeah.
And that helps us
and
get
that,
through.
I think gets to what Larry was talking about before, about speaking your own words and et cetera, is that to focus on those things that are actually going to get to the solutions for them. You know, I often thought that whole thing about, visualizing what you're going to do, but as a musician, I do that a lot because, it's like I'm supposed to play some types of music. So then I listen to it and I'm like, okay, how would I play that? And I just visualize my actually playing that. And it actually is extremely helpful because I know what I'm going to be doing once I get to the actual music. So, yeah, incredibly helpful in that. Well, speaking of Amalek, yes, the time that we're talking about here with Shabbat Zachor, or the Sabbath of Remembrance, is to remember what it is that Amalek did to Israel. And, we think that, okay, well, this is talking about some ancient nation that did something to people that are long gone. The problem, though, is that and lots of people have brought this up over many centuries, is that this spirit of Amalek, and we saw that there in the passage in Deuteronomy 25, 17 through 19. What are some of those aspects of Amalek that are described in here? They went attacked from behind. They went and attacked the people who are weaker, the people who are vulnerable. They didn't attack things front on, attack the things that are strongest. No, they went and looked for the weakest areas to see what are we going to do to attack that which is the weakest. So that kind of spirit that is manifested in so many different ways, this is more than just, we would say, missing the mark, or a chata, a missing the mark. We call it a sin. This is so much more than that. This is into, when you're hitting the peg to 11 here, it's gone past 10, it's gone to 11, into the awon, or as we translate it, is iniquity area. That is where this kind of spirit of Amalek is that it goes for what is the absolute worst. What is the absolute worst? And sadly, we're being introduced to it over and over and over and over again. When we see the things that are the absolute worst, conflict happens every day. The things we saw happening in the land of Israel back in October, that's way beyond the pale of things that happen. You know, you see things that happen in warfare, and then you see things that happen in warfare that are just unbelievably, we would say, diabolical. Well, where do we get that word from? Yes, the adversary. Things that are just completely opposed to that which is good. So thus, when you see, it's kind of a very interesting thing when we talk about Purim and in Esther, and where do we see some of these key aspects before? And it's one of those things that sometimes when the sages are talking about a various key connection with things, they saw a connection between Haman and back in Genesis chapter 2 when it was talking about the trees and where you eat from. It says, you can eat from all the trees in the garden. So you see the same letters in there. You see the same letters. They have different vowels that have been added over time. But when you're just looking at them in straight Hebrew with no vowels, it's the same word. It's translated differently into, you know, you have freedom to eat from all this stuff in the garden, but just don't eat from that tree. So what do we see? And what we're going to do our dramatic reading here of the book of Esther. What do we see in this book? Everybody's bowing to Haman, but one. That should sound kind of familiar. You can eat from any tree in the garden you want, except for one. And what is that tree? We've been talking about it a lot here. The tree of the knowledge of good and bad. So you want sustenance? You want to know what is good and bad? The Lord's already defined it. You can have everything except for one thing. He's defined that there's the good. Everything was good, 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 and very good. And then there is one thing that is raw, bad. Stay away from that. But that claims to be what will make you wise. So that is the thing that our first couple of humanity, they gravitated to that. And it was the attraction of that which was going to make one wise. Yes, so we got the knowledge of good and bad. But then the problem is that there's been the groping about in the darkness ever since. What is good? What is bad? What is good? What is bad? And you see some cultures have kind of gotten very, very close to a good definition, a good distinction, a good discernment between what is good and what is bad. Others have gone way, way, way off course to where you have a whole culture of people that are doing diabolical things. And, you know, we've seen that in modern history, where there have been entire countries, empires that have acted in ways that are just incredibly reprehensible. Even though on the surface, they were highly sophisticated and highly refined, and even had some of the most learned people in the Bible. You know, a lot of what has come through in the realm of biblical research and studies, linguistics, and this and that and the other, where did that come from? Germany. Late 1800s was the center of learning for Bible scholarship. But it was also the center for learning a Bible scholarship called higher criticism, where you are up here and you look down on the word instead of where you are and looking up at the word as being something that was the words of the creator of heaven and earth. We are learned and we look down upon the words of heaven and earth. And thus, what then do we start seeing? We start seeing an outcome from higher criticism. It's the spirit of Shaul. You know, we're doing good things, but, you know, some things that it says in the word, you know, we just decide to neglect, decide that we know better about it, decide that it has to be culturally interpreted, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's one of those things where you start drifting off. I think of it brings to mind, you know, when I was out commercial fishing, told this fish story quite a lot about being in extremely high seas in a very small boat, which is dumb. Let me just tell you, do not do that. Don't be out in 30-foot seas in a 17-foot boat. Not a good idea. But if you have an anchor out there and you're trying to sleep through the night, and the only place where you can drop an anchor is a sandy bottom, how do you think that's going to hold? It doesn't. So what did we have to do the whole night? Every 30 minutes, get up, turn on the thing, boat, move the boat a little bit more, drop a couple more anchors and hope for the best. But nope, didn't hold. It just kept drifting closer and closer to the rocks on the seashore. So yes, I think it was Larry and then Alex. Go ahead, please.
Well, what I was thinking, I'm not sure I got it right, to tell you the truth, but the I thought it said that Satan was put, the angel, when he was an angel, who was put in charge of helping humans. So when the humans, if they were aware that that's the guy that was coming to tell them, okay, go ahead, you can have this tree, don't worry about it, you know, God knows this. They if they knew that, they would expect that this was a person that was wise and should be teaching them, and they would, so it was extra. Like you were saying, the guys that were wise and knew a lot, but were not God, said, do it something different than what God said. You know, that would make it more difficult for them. Yeah. But still, you have to look to him, not to anybody else.
Yeah, and it kind of, we're going through Galatians right now, and you might have remembered a line there in Galatians chapter 1, where Paul is writing to Galatia, and he says, yes,
the angels.
If any one of us, or if an angel comes and tells you some other good news of the kingdom, let them be accursed. And he repeats that twice. So, you know, in biblical parlance, that is underscored, underlined, circled, boldface, saying, yeah, don't follow somebody else, even if they are, quote, established or a messenger from heaven, etc. Yes, Alex, go ahead, please.
I was going to follow up what you said about very smart people like Justin Martyr. They presented this story. They took this piece of information and that and got a conclusion, and it became doctrine. And that's part of how the Christian church grew. So out of what Justin Martyr's conclusion was about, I hate your festivals and your sacrifices. That's what built the Catholic Church, what we're descended from. We have to keep that in mind.
Yep, always keep in mind to test things. It's one of those things in the book of Acts when they talk about that when Paul was coming to him, the people in Berea, they tested it out. I said, to find out if the things he was saying were actually accurate or not. All right, so that's where we'll end it here with our discussion today. So we'll kind of reset the deck here for our time for a dramatic reading of the book of Esther. But one of the things that we just want to take a look here and say, this discussion here of Amalek and the forces that are going on there that will be seen in the book of Esther, this is not something far removed from our time whatsoever. This spirit of Amalek present in Haman and elsewhere, you'll see that show up again and again and again. And this hatred against that which is true. The aphorism, you know, shoot the messenger, is certainly in play here. Because what is the message that Mordecai is giving to Haman? You're not king. You are not king. You are highly esteemed, yes, but you're not king. So respect who the king is in that. And that kind of takes you back to the garden as well. You know, we are not God. The attraction and appeal of the tree of the knowledge of good and bad was that, hey, you can be like God. Quickly learned that, no, that's not, we are not the creator.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hallel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hallel.info. That's H-A-L-L-E-L dot I-N-F-O, hallel.info.